Blog Talk Radio.
Ignite your life with passion and purpose. Your health, your wealth, your happiness. Make it good. This is Modern Love with Dr. Brenda Wade.
A big thank you to Rainbow Grocery, our favorite grocery store here in the San Francisco Bay Area, for being our sponsor, because a healthy body is a sexy body.
Oh, hello, modern lovers. And yes, we're going to talk about what makes your love life even sexier, and it's something you'll never think of. We're going to talk tonight with the empathy guy. And we're going to dive into the language of love. And our empathy guy says the language of love is empathy. So hang on to your hat. You're going to learn something very, very important about how your language can deepen your love. Or if you don't have this language, it could hurt your love. You're going to meet tonight Tony Scruggs, who's known as the empathy guy. His psych degree is from UCLA, and his empathy training includes time in India with the Gandhi family. And once upon a time, he played Major League Baseball for the President of the United States. All right, he's a non-bullying speaker, a mindfulness trainer. He helps people figure out the big reasons they do what they do and how to talk about it. His new book is Excellence Off the Field, and I'll give you a little preview of coming attractions right now. His website is www.facebook.com. Leading with compassion. Welcome to the show, Tony Scruggs.
Who is that guy? Thank you, Dr. Brenda, for having me on. What an amazing intro. I was listening and thinking, man, I want to hear what that guy has to say, and then I realized I'm that guy.
Good. I'm glad you're that guy. And Tony, you got to just tell us, how did you go into Major League Baseball? Tell us that story.
Oh, wow. I love that question. I'm glad I prepared freestyle. I'm digging at that. So if you and your listeners happen to remember a little TV show called The Jeffersons, there was a theme song called Moving On Up. And part of the theme song was getting to the big leagues and having my turn at bat. And I was a little boy, and my psych PhD mother said, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I just repeated what I had heard. I said, I want to play Major League Baseball and do what you do. And she said, then you can do it, Tony. You can do it. The next thing
That's a great story. One for mom, Tony. I love it. There's nothing better than having a psych PhD for a mother. Ask my children.
Wow. I just may do that. I was just thinking. So then I grew up in Palo Alto, California. Pops lives in San Francisco. Shout out to the Lion King. I know you're listening. I got recruited out of Palo Alto High School to play baseball at UCLA. And then I was drafted by the Angels, and I had made a promise to my mom to at least finish a certain level of schooling. So I actually turned down the Angels, Dr. Brenda. I turned down the Angels and went back to school, played another year, and got drafted higher by the Texas Rangers. 3 years later, I was sitting in the dugout with Nolan Ryan, Goose Gossage, and Sammy Sosa. Who?
Wow.
Go figure. Go figure.
Amazing. And you kept your promise to your mom. Even more importantly, now I don't know about that psych mom thing, because my daughter once said to me when she was about 11, and you call yourself a psychologist. I was like, wow, that's pretty good, honey. Thanks. There you have it. So
and
how
you know,
did
there
you...
wasn't...
Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say there wasn't – my uncle is has his PhD in anthropology, and my dad has his MBA, so there was no baby talk in our home, like zero baby talk. I was hearing about human variation and psychoneuroimmunology when I was 8 years old. That's
as it should be. As it should be, from my perspective. So, Tony, how did you go from Major League Baseball into talking about empathy? That's a pretty big transition. You know, professional sports isn't always known as the proving ground for that kind of connection and that kind of emotional wherewithal. I've spent some time myself working with certain professional athletes who, of course, shall remain nameless, who were lacking in empathy and in some deep doo-doo in their relationships, as a matter of fact.
Wow, I can resonate with that a great deal. The answer to your question probably goes back to the Jeffersons a little bit. You know, my mom asked me what I want to do, and I said, I want to do what you do, psychology, and play in the big leagues. I think it starts a tiny bit before that. My parents decided to send me to Montessori school. And Montessori has empathy kind of built into its mission. And I remember being 4 years old, sitting with this little girl, noticing that she seemed to be in some sort of emotional pain, and I didn't have the words to comfort her. So I just walked over and put my arm around her, and I made a commitment in that moment that someday I was going to not only figure out how to physically comfort somebody, but how to verbally comfort them as well.
That's a big decision for a four-year-old. Wow. Amazing. So how did the journey unfold? And as you're talking about this, what if you start by also saying what empathy means to you? Because it's a word that I think people have different definitions, different ways of understanding.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. So I will do both those, Dean. I will define it and take you through the journey. So Montessori leads to, a few years later, a knock on the door, some well-dressed young man talk to me about their philosophy of life and hand me a book. My father comes home, sees the book, gently removes it from my hands, goes to the library, and gives me a different book. The book he gave me was a book called Psycho-Cybernetics by Maxwell Maltz. So I'm 12 years old, and the book, you know what, actually I won't say the book that he took out of my hands, but Psycho-Cybernetics got me started, and that led to being a freshman in the dugout of Jackie Robinson Stadium at UCLA, and who walks in to give us a little speech but Coach Wooden. And here's the winningest basketball coach in history, and he's there to share with us his philosophy of life called the Pyramid of Success. So he says, boys, do me a favor and delete the concept of perfection and upload the concept of excellence. And while you're at it, remember this. A coach is somebody who helps people figure out how to be excellent at something, reminds them of their excellence, and then every once in a while lets them know when they're being less than excellent. So that seed was planted after the psycho-cybernetic seed. And then I get to my first week in the minor leagues, and I'm on a bus.
Now, for those who don't know what psycho-cybernetics is, break that down for Matt.
So psycho-cybernetics is the art of – I'm wanting to say that the neurolinguistic – actually, maybe NLP might be a little bit psycho-cybernetics is the ability to shift your thoughts, shift your emotions – by shifting your beliefs and your physiology. So changing your thoughts and changing your physiology, you can change your emotional state. And that's what I got from psycho-cybernetics. Even though it comes across as a little bit mechanical, so I was happy that my next leap was to Unlimited Power by Tony Robbins. And I'm 21, first week in professional baseball, and I read the sentence that says, nothing has any meaning except for the meaning that we give it, and it's not what happens, it's what we do with what happens that makes the difference. So I took that experience from Montessori, and then from 12-year-old with psycho-cybernetics, and then from Coach Wooden, and I added that to Unlimited Power, And here comes the empathy piece. And I will honor Dr. Brenda's request right now. Empathy, the way I learned it growing up, was putting yourself in the shoes of another person. Where my story goes right now is
I like that definition. That's really, really clear. I like it. We'll come back to that. Yeah. So
you're going to love this then.
Okay, go for it.
Because the next definition of empathy that I heard on that next stop in my life journey changed my life forever and took that original definition and just built a mansion upon it. And what happened was my father, who, like I was saying before, has a house overlooking DuBose Park in San Francisco. Oh, big shout out to Rainbow Groceries. A healthy body is a sexy body. My father called and he said, "Hey, Tone, I'm singing at a friend's wedding, and he happens to teach this philosophy that you might be interested in. You want to drive up from Los Angeles to San Francisco and give it a little listen." I agreed. The seminar was in the morning before the wedding, and that man said the definition of empathy that I hold with me today. Are you ready to hear it?
I am ready. I'm ready. Okay, everybody, write this down. Go ahead.
Empathy is hearing what people are feeling and seeing what people are needing. Empathy is hearing what people are feeling. Are you feeling frustrated? And then seeing what people are needing. Are you feeling frustrated because your need for respect wasn't met by what your friend just said? So when I learned, what do you think about that?
I like it. I like it a lot because it's functional. It breaks it down in terms of what is happening inside us. We are seeing what somebody's feeling, and then we see what they need because there's a very functional definition there. I like it. Because a lot of people think of empathy as, and I actually have heard people say this, being too soft. You know, you're worrying about people's feelings. That's up to them. You know, you're being too soft. And empathy, I think, has been misunderstood. So that first definition reminds me of a way that First Nations people, Native Americans teach it. They say, if you want to know who somebody is, walk a mile in their moccasins.
Yeah.
And so when you say put your feet in somebody else's shoes, that, you know, that's a really interesting process. And because you're here with us on Modern Love Radio, of course, I'm thinking about all those people who need this skill as a relationship building block. It's very difficult to be in a healthy relationship, isn't it, Tony, if you don't have empathy?
Absolutely. Would you like to hear a story of a recent adventure that I had with a husband and a wife in regards to what you just said?
You bet.
Okay, so I play softball in Los Angeles on teams that have either directors or actors or stunt people. And by now, after a few years of teaching mindful empathy, I've been known, like you said at the beginning, as the empathy guy. And, you know, guys will actually come to me in the middle of a game and ask me for help. It's amazing. And so I was working with one teammate who said, "Scruggsy, man, how do I get my partner to get to show up on time when we're leaving for an event?" And I first gave him empathy for his frustration. I said, "Oh, you know, this seems like it's really frustrating for you. You want to leave on time and you want a partner who kind of honors what you're needing." He's like, "Yes, oh man, yeah. And then we got into the skill. And I was empathizing with his partner the entire time until we got everybody together. And I knew exactly what was going to happen and what I was going to say. And here's what happened. I asked her, "You know, I hear your partner saying that he would like to leave on time, and I get this sense that you're hearing that as a demand. And since our only option when we hear a demand is to submit or rebel, you either give in with irritation or you just buck him and you show up afterwards. And she goes, you're dang right. He's telling me what to do. No, telling me what to do. I'm like, oh, okay. So autonomy is really important to you. And she said, oh, thank God someone can hear me. And I asked him to repeat back what her important need was. And he said, she's pissed at me. She doesn't want to listen. And I said, oh, you know what? Thanks for telling me that's how you heard it. I'm wanting you to hear that autonomy is important to you, for her. And he said, okay, autonomy is important for her. And she looked at him with this loving gaze, and he got it really quick that, oh, this understanding stuff might be pretty good. So we got to the point where he could understand her need for autonomy, not to be told what to do, and she could understand his need for predictability and being on time. And then once they were able to hear each other's emotional needs, then we could work on a strategy to honor both people. What happens, Dr. Brenda, is couples that I've worked with tend to argue about the strategies and never connect at the heart with their emotional needs, which actually, once you're there, the strategies just kind of fly off everywhere. It's amazing. And the strategy that she wanted was that 20 minutes before they were going to leave, he would walk up the stairs instead of yell up the stairs. He would gently put his arm on her shoulder and say, hon, what do you predict would need to happen for us to leave in about a half hour? Or do you think there's something that would prevent that? And that was her strategy. That's what she wanted, a touch on the shoulder, a gentle tone, and prediction instead of a declaration. When he
nice,
heard that.
Very nice. Big shift. That's a big shift. And I hope that all of our listeners are catching what's under the empathy is the opportunity for him to be supportive, to speak in a
mm-hmm.
loving way. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, you can't really go wrong when you mix empathy into it, because it does include support. It does
mm-hmm.
include kind of, I've got a picture of the Dalai Lama on my desk here, and his
mm-hmm.
motto is, the religion I practice is kindness. And you can't go wrong
Ooh.
In a relationship when you're practicing empathy, because it's a form of kindness. Now, Tony, I know that gratitude is also part of what you teach people. How does that relate to empathy?
Oh, great question. So here I am sitting at that wedding, which by the way, if you can visualize it, that my dad is singing at the wedding of the architect of nonviolent communication. And that's my first day meeting him, listening to the philosophy, and being connected with all that you and I are talking about right now. It was surreal to be that connected to the architect, Marshall Rosenberg. So rest in peace, Marshall Rosenberg, and thank you for the gifts. So at that seminar before the wedding, Marshall said, how many of you know how to give a verbal gratitude? Some people call it a compliment, but I think of it as a verbal gratitude. And most of the people raised their hand. And then he said, how many people know how to receive a verbal gratitude? And almost nobody raised their hand. I think I started to, and then I was like, I'm not even sure what that means. And what happened a few weeks later when I got a chance to really dive into this subject with Marshall was he believed that giving a gratitude, telling somebody what they did, how it left us feeling, and what emotional needs of ours were met by it, was such a gift to the other person. In fact, it's such a gift. I'm going to say that again. To give a verbal gratitude, tell the person what they did. Hey, you know when you drove me to the airport? Tell them how that left you feeling. Man, I felt so grateful. And then tell them the emotional need that was met by what they did. Oh, man, the gift of friendship and courtesy and consideration is just so important to me. So that's what Marshall taught me about how to give a gratitude. And then he basically said that receiving a gratitude was the way that we connected the circle of love, that when someone gave a gratitude, it was only half the circle, that if we receive it with the same vulnerability, Dr. Brenda, that the circle not only connects, but then it completes.
That
and
makes
no
sense.
Start.
Now, how, for those people who are back where you were with their
okay.
hands down going, I don't know how to receive, how do you receive it when somebody, because most people can't even receive a compliment. So he says, you look,
right.
oh, this old thing, oh, you know, I found it in the back of the closet on the floor and I just threw it on today. Most people can't receive compliments. We have this way of batting away positive
yes.
come toward us. So how do you receive,
yes.
As you're calling it, a verbal gratitude?
Here's one way to receive a verbal gratitude, an actual example. Somebody says something that you've done for them and they're really appreciative, you can say to the other person, wow, I appreciate you saying that. I'm happy that I could help. That's it. I appreciate you saying that. I'm happy that I could help. And that completes the circle of love. Another way is, oh, I'm grateful to hear that. I'm glad that I could contribute. Yeah, you know, I'm really grateful to hear that. I'm glad that I could contribute.
So you're kind of practicing something. Even infants know how to do this. It's called serve and return. The baby knows how to engage the parent, and then the parent returns with a smile and a goo-goo-ga-ga, and the baby goes goo-goo-ga-ga, and they can serve or they can return. You know, this is true. By 16 weeks of age, children are really good at this, infants. So what you're saying is somebody serves to you, you need
yeah.
to return and say thank you for saying that or to acknowledge. And, you know, this, I want to back you up here for a minute, Tony,
yeah.
because I spend so much of my time teaching seminars and writing books and working with people on how to deepen their love connection, how to even become a person who's capable of a love connection. And this return and send phenomena is crucial. People often are saying things to each other. The other person is never receiving it or returning it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And
there's a lot
I,
of talking
remember,
at each other.
Yes, and one of the simple ways that I learned is if somebody says, you know what, when you took me to the airport, it left me feeling really grateful. It met my needs for friendship. The return of that serve would just be the reflection. Oh, so you're appreciative that I met your need for friendship by taking you to the airport. And that, if you just reflect back the verbal gratitude as a question, that is another easy way to receive gratitude. And then if for those listening, if you just want an easy way to receive a gratitude, I'm happy I could help. I'm glad I could contribute. I'm happy I could help. I'm glad I contribute. Then
that's
you're
a good one. And I have one
love.
I offer also. I'm going to just tag in. I only
Yay.
Tell people if somebody's acknowledging you, you can just say, thank you. That means a lot.
Yeah.
Just thank you. Anything. And it could be nonverbal. Sometimes the
yes.
return can be a smile, a hug, a touch. It's just staying, and I like it that you describe it as a circle. Stay in the circle. Stay in the circle because, you know, everything's energy. Energy goes toward you. You got to send some back. So keep moving with me here, Tony. How
yeah.
do you say no with compassion?
This skill was something that I remember the first time I heard Wayne Dyer say, a satori is an instant awakening. It's when you hear a concept, you don't need to practice it. You just, boom, it just makes sense. And when I heard somebody say, in order to say no with compassion, you need to refrain from using the word no. And say what prevents you from saying yes. So to say no with compassion, you say to the other person what prevents you from saying yes. For example, somebody asks you to do something for them, and you have something else that you've been committed to do. Instead of saying, oh, dude, I can't, or no, or sorry, dude, say, you know what, man? A previous commitment prevents me from saying yes. It is amazing. Being in that yes abundance energy, Dr. Brenda, as I'm sure you can imagine, is so even if the person legitimately has something else to do, hearing no just creates a different energy than, oh, man, you know what? My need to honor previous commitment prevents me from saying yes. I have had people almost give me love for responding with that type of saying no with compassion, by saying what prevented me from saying yes. And a very fun way for me is when something just doesn't align with me spiritually, I've said to somebody, you know what, man, my need to follow my heart keeps me from saying yes. Are you cool with that? And they're like, oh, yeah, dude, I wouldn't want to mess with following your heart. Absolutely. So
yeah, I like that because you're honoring yourself and you're also putting yourself in a place where the other person is getting that there is something going on that prevents you from saying yes without feeling let down. So that's compassion. Now, give us, what's the difference between empathy and compassion?
That's interesting because I've coined a word called compassioning, adding the ing, because it seemed like people were talking about bullying. And I, for like a day, I kept thinking, what's the other side of bullying? What is an ing word? And I realized there wasn't one. So I added ing to compassion to make it an action, compassioning. And the way I see compassion by itself is, I think compassion is the empathic thought. I think it is the ability to wonder what's going on with somebody and want to be able to help. That's what I think compassion is. Compassioning is actually going out and doing something, taking action on behalf of another member of Team Humanity, where empathy is connecting to the heart and the soul of the other person that you're with. Does that resonate?
Yeah, yeah. You know, I like to break compassion down into the two words that are the root words, calm, the Latin for with, and passion, be with the feelings. And empathy, it seems as if empathy has a more active kind of process in it. Like empathy is, I want to really understand that. I like how you said at the beginning, I want to see what the person is feeling and know that there's something I can do about it.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's why I actually made the distinction in Excellence Off the Field between mindful empathy, mirror empathy, and emotional empathy. Emotional empathy is where somebody feels what the other person is feeling, so they feel sad, you feel sad. Mirror empathy is when somebody inflicts pain on another person in order for that person to understand their pain. That's where it gets really deep. Somebody, the only strategy they've ever learned on how to be understood is inflicting pain on another person so that person will look at them with how they feel inside. Does that make sense when I say that?
Yeah, which actually doesn't work. It actually doesn't
no.
work.
Because the other person
hurting
isn't
somebody
a
does not promote understanding, compassion, or empathy. What it usually promotes is anger, because we cannot get out of anger by creating more of it. You know, that old saying, hate can never conquer hate, love alone can conquer hate. So I want to come down hard with both feet with you there, Tony, because I know that what you're saying to people is that's not a workable technique. It's just not workable.
Absolutely. Not
if somebody hurts
not
you, it's really important to bring even more empathy and compassion, and boundaries, and boundaries. So we need to end in just a minute, but how does empathy work with boundaries? Is that taking us back to the no, or is there a different kind of boundary we need?
What I've noticed is that if feelings are the language of the soul and our emotional needs are the language of the heart, what I've noticed is that once we are giving somebody our heart and soul, connection is so inevitable that the strategy, like I consider boundaries a strategy, the strategy becomes this gift that we want to offer to the other person. Oh, you know what? It sounds like you're frustrated because your need for respect isn't being met. I'm wondering if I could support you in any way. Oh, yes, you could do this, this, and this. And the person lays out their boundaries of what would honor their emotional needs, and it becomes this gift. So the way that most people think about boundaries as maybe not something as joyful, once you're connected at the heart, feelings, and needs, it's a gift. You want to do strategies that honor people's humanity. And once we honor everybody's humanity, we see each other as one big family, Team Humanity.
Indeed, we are one big family. I know you've spent time in India, as have I, and there's a concept practice there that's simply called oneness, to understand that we are one. And it seems to me that what you're really teaching Tony Struggs, empathy guy, the author of Excellence Off the Field, is that the road to oneness and recognizing that deep, deep spiritual truth is empathy.
Yes, and mindful empathy is my synergy of both nonviolent communication that I learned from Marshall Rosenberg and transformational vocabulary from Tony Robbins. So mindful empathy is this absolute wonderful way of speaking and being where we can connect to ourselves and to others.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Tony Struggs, the empathy guy, everybody. And trust me, in modern love, given that we are so mobile, so global, so tech-driven, there is a place to practice empathy if you are looking for love and looking for true love and you want to keep true love. You must practice empathy along with some other wonderful tools that I invite you to join me in learning on May 21st, Creating Sacred Relationships is a class I'm presenting in Sacramento, California. So if you're interested and you're listening to this podcast before May 21st, send me an email, register now, love@docway.com. Stay with us for more wonderful guests like Tony Struggs here on Modern Love Radio. And thank you to our brilliant executive producer, Mr. LeGrand Green, our wonderful associate producer, Mr. Cliff Dunning, and thank you to all of you modern lovers. I love you. Blessings, everybody. Good night.